loves us. Tonight we are going to be digging into His Word, and there is important things for us, and just we count it a privilege. As we come to chapter 17, we particularly, of course, 1 and 2 Samuel are very much about the life of David, and of course we are right in midst a lot of what he's going through here. In chapter 17, David's son Absalom is leading a rebellion against his father, David, the king. And to prevent a battle taking place in Jerusalem, David decides to leave Jerusalem. And so David has left Jerusalem. Meanwhile, Absalom has now come into Jerusalem, and Absalom begins to kind of set up shop, so to speak, as he is attempting to take over the rule of Israel. In the doing of that, as Absalom arrives back into Jerusalem, he seeks the advice of a guy named Ahithophel. Ahithophel had been a counselor to David, a friend of David's, but he has now gone over to Absalom's side. So Absalom is now making this effort to gain the throne. Ahithophel is at his side to counsel him. And Ahithophel tells Absalom, as he comes into Jerusalem, that what he needs to do is go in and lie with David's concubines. David had left a group of women there to take care of David's house while David was gone from Jerusalem. And Ahithophel, at the end of chapter 16, Ahithophel tells David, what you need to do is you go in and you need to lie with them. And he gives that advice because in doing that, the people will see that, because that kind of thing, of course, would be a great offense to David, and it would help the people understand there's no chance of reconciliation between father and son. And the idea is that the people will be encouraged to then take a stand with Absalom, that Absalom really means business in this rebellion against his father. I remember, the Lord had told David this would happen. When David had committed that sin, adultery with Bathsheba, and then the subsequent killing of Bathsheba's husband, God had told David that the sword would never depart from his household. And we see that's the case with the rebellion of Absalom in here. And he also told David that this one would come along and lie with his wives in the sight of the nation. And that comes to pass also at the end of chapter 16. So David knows that much of what's happening here is the result of his own sin. And that adds to the burden, if you will, the weight of what's happening here. The nation going against him. I mean, think about it. His son is leading rebellion. The hearts of the people are being won over to this rebellion. Things are just, it's a rough time. The idea is it's a rough time for David. But through it all, we've seen that David's heart, a heart after God's heart, continues to be so. Now, as we come to chapter 17, I just want to point out one thing. It's important to note the position that this guy named Ahithophel holds in the people's eyes. So at the very end of chapter 16, verse 23, we read this. Now, the advice of Ahithophel, which he gave in those days, was as if one had inquired at the oracle of God. So was all the advice of Ahithophel, both with David and with Absalom. So David is out of town. Absalom is in town in Jerusalem. He's trying to gain the throne. Ahithophel is his counselor, and Ahithophel has looked up to everybody. The idea is when you talk to Ahithophel, it's almost like you're talking to God. He's got such great advice and counsel. With that stated, we come to chapter 17. Let's pray. Father, as we now dig into your word, we ask you to take your word and by your spirit, Lord, dig into us. Don't let us coast. Don't let us settle for less than your full work. Lord, for soil to receive seed, it needs preparation. So, Lord, prepare our heart. Break up any hardness. Lord, take away any distractions and help us gain from this time what you desire. It's so awesome that you love us. And these things are to prepare us. They're to mold us and shape us, Lord. You want to work in us and through us. And so, Lord, may you find in us those who say, Lord, have your way. Thank you. In Jesus' name. Amen. Chapter 17. Moreover, Ahithophel said to Absalom, now let me choose 12,000 men, and I will arise and pursue David tonight. I will come upon him while he is weary and weak and make him afraid. And all the people who are with him will flee, and I will strike only the king. Then I will bring back all the people to you. When all return except the man whom you seek, all the people will be at peace. And the saying pleased Absalom and all the elders of Israel. So as chapter 17 opens here, David is out fleeing from his son and the rebellion going on. Absalom is here in Jerusalem, and now Ahithophel gives this advice. Ahithophel says, look, give me these men, give me 12,000 men, and I will pursue David. We will kill him, and all the people will come back, and there'll be this great response for having done this. The idea here is that, it's interesting. When the idea is set forward, it says, the saying pleased Absalom and all the elders of Israel. Now, what is the saying? What's Ahithophel's advice? Let me take some men and go kill your father. Now, think about that. The advice is to kill David, and his own son likes the idea. These are sad times for David. His former counselor and friend, Ahithophel, actually suggests it. And David and the elders of Israel like the idea of killing David. It is a sad time. Think what David's going through. This is not just a bad hair day that David's been going through. We've been traveling with this. He's gone through this time, these chapters here, as we read about this insurrection and all. When your son wants you dead, when the people you thought were for you are against you, when they're all lined up about think this is a great idea to have you destroyed, it is a rough time. And think about Absalom. He's willing to have his own father killed just to forward his own ambitions. Verse 5. Then Absalom said, now call Hushai the Archite also, and let us hear what he says too. Absalom has just heard what Ahithophel counsels, but he says, let's call in Hushai and hear what he has to say. Remember, Hushai was also a counselor and all, and he is actually loyal to David. Hushai had gone to go out with David to leave town. That was his first, what he wanted to do. But David actually said, go back and pretend to be on Absalom's side. We'd read this previously. David tells Hushai, I know you're loyal to me, but you go back and pretend to be loyal to Absalom. The idea is so that Hushai might be able to be used of the Lord to defeat Ahithophel's counsel and to keep David posted on what's going on here in Jerusalem. But Absalom believes that Hushai is on his side, and so he calls for Hushai to get his input. Verse 6, and when Hushai came to Absalom, Absalom spoke to him, saying, Ahithophel has spoken in this manner. Shall we do as he says? If not, speak up. So Hushai said to Absalom, the advice that Ahithophel has given is not good at this time. For, said Hushai, you know your father and his men, that they are mighty men, and they are enraged in their minds, like a bear robbed of her cubs in the field. And your father is a man of war. It will not camp with the people. Surely by now he is hidden in some pit or in some other place. And it will be when some of them are overthrown at the first that whoever hears it will say there is a slaughter among the people who follow Absalom. And even he who is valiant, whose heart is like the heart of a lion, will melt completely. For all Israel knows that your father is a mighty man, and those who are with him are valiant men. So what's he saying here? He says, well, no, this isn't a great idea that Ahithophel has set before you. Ahithophel's idea was, let me take some guys and I'll get out there and we'll catch David and all the other guys will come back with you and it'll be this great victory. Hushai says, wait a minute. You know your dad. He's not a pushover. I mean, David is used of the Lord to be, he's a mighty warrior. He'd killed a lot of Philistines. He had been brave in battle. And plus he's got all these mighty men with him that had served with him. And these guys are just that. They are good, strong warriors. And Hushai says, think about it. He's not going to just, you know, be a pushover here. There's going to be a battle, and a lot of your guys are going to die. Matter of fact, he says, so many are going to die, they're probably going to come running back and say, hey, anybody that follows Absalom is hurting. You know, it's not a good way to go. So verse 11, he gives this advice. Therefore, I advise that all Israel be gathered to you from Dan to Beersheba. That's an expression meaning from all the way up in the north down to the south of Israel, like the sand that is by the sea for multitude, and that you go to battle in person. So we will come upon him in some place where he may be found, and we'll fall on him as the dew falls on the ground. And of him and all the men who are with him, there shall not be left so much as one. Moreover, if he has withdrawn into a city, then all Israel shall bring ropes to that city, and we will pull it into the river until there's not one small stone found there. So Absalom and all the men of Israel said, "The advice of Hushai the Archite is better than the advice of Ahithophel." For the Lord had purposed to defeat the good advice of Ahithophel to the intent that the Lord might bring disaster on Absalom. Hushai says, do it this way. It's interesting. Hushai gives this advice that is contrary to Ahithophel's. And basically, what's his advice? Hey, David and his men won't be an easy target. If you send guys after him now, there's going to be a big fight, and many of your troops are going to get hurt. Instead, do this. He says, wait, gather together all the people of Israel. And Absalom, you lead us out to battle. With that number, no matter what David chooses to do, no matter how many are with him, we will just overwhelm him. We'll be like the sands of the sea. We'll just overwhelm him like the dew on the ground in the morning. We'll just cover him. And that way we'll for sure get a victory. And you lead us, Absalom. See, the appeal here is what? To Absalom's pride. You should lead us. You'll be the one in charge. You'll get the credit for this. And you'll get the victory because we'll totally outnumber them. But you got to wait. You got to wait and gather all your troops together to have this plan work. Now, this, of course, is designed to give David time to escape. If they go with Ahithophel's plan, they're pursuing right away. But with Hushai, it's going to take time to get all the troops together, and it gives David time to escape. Because the key part of this in verse 14 here is this: for the Lord had purposed to defeat the good advice of Ahithophel to the intent that the Lord might bring disaster on Absalom. Things are unfolding here. God is involved. His plan is unfolding. He's simply using Hushai's counsel. But the men hear it, Absalom and the men with him, the men of Israel, and they go, whoa, Hushai's advice is better than Ahithophel's. So they elect to go with his. Verse 15. Then Hushai said to Zadok and Abiathar the priest, thus and so Ahithophel advised Absalom and the elders of Israel, and thus and so I have advised. Now remember, Zadok and Abiathar are also on David's side. They are two priests, but they are on David's side. They remained in Jerusalem. David had told them to do this, to keep David advised of what was going on also. And so, verse 16, now therefore send quickly and tell David, saying, do not spend this night in the plains of the wilderness, but speedily cross over, lest the king and all the people who are with him be swallowed up. Now Jonathan and Ahimaaz stayed at En-Rogel, for they dared not be seen coming into the city. So a female servant would come and tell them, and they would go and tell the king David. Jonathan and Ahimaaz are sons of Abiathar and Zadok, and they stay right outside of town. The idea here is, the word is passed to them through their fathers, to these sons, and these sons are to run out and tell David. And the message here is, go and tell David, don't stop. Keep pressing on, get over the Jordan River. If you go to Jerusalem today, and then travel east, you'll see Jerusalem's up in the hills, and then you start heading east, and you go down through the hills and all, and you finally eventually kind of get out to a plain, and there's the Jordan River. And it's a natural barrier in those days. You get across there, and it would slow down any force that was pursuing you. So he says, don't stop to rest. Keep pressing on. Tell David to keep going on to get over the Jordan River to some safety. And so they tell Ahimaaz and Jonathan to go tell David. Now, verse 18. Nevertheless, a lad saw them. So a young lad sees them tell these two guys to go tell David, and he tells Absalom. But both of them went away quickly and came to a man's house in Bahurim, who had a well in his court, and they went down into it. Then the woman took and spread a covering over the well's mouth and spread ground grain on it, and the thing was not known. And when Absalom's servants came to the woman at the house, they said, where are Ahimaaz and Jonathan? So the woman said to them, they have gone over the water brook. And when they had searched and could not find them, they returned to Jerusalem. Now it came to pass after they had departed that they came up out of the well and went and told King David, and said to David, "Arise and cross over the water quickly, for thus has Ahithophel advised against you." So David and all the people who were with him arose and crossed over the Jordan. By morning light, not one of them was left who had not gone over the Jordan. So they just throw in this little story. This boy hears about these two guys being warned to go tell David, and he goes and tells Absalom. He sends some servants to catch these two guys, but they hide inside a well. They cover the well up so you can't tell it's there. They come and they ask the woman, and they go, well, they were here, but they kept on going. So they take off, and then these two guys catch up with David and tell him, better get over the Jordan, and David does just that. Verse 23. Now when Ahithophel saw that his advice was not followed, he saddled a donkey and arose and went home to his house, to his city. Then he put his household in order and hanged himself and died. And he was buried in his father's tomb. Ahithophel apparently can't handle that his advice was not followed. His counsel, Ahithophel's counsel, had been so highly esteemed that apparently his pride had grown along with his reputation. So comes this time when his advice is not followed. Instead, they follow Hushai's advice. And apparently in his mind, that was just too much of an embarrassment, too humbling to actually think that he would not have the best advice, to think that his advice would not be followed. Thus, he commits suicide rather than face the embarrassment of being a counselor who gave advice one time that wasn't followed. Just as a side comment for a moment, things can get overwhelming at times. In this case, Ahithophel's pride certainly got the better of him, but there are times that pain and loss and things can really darken us and send clouds our way, and actually can be used by the enemy to get us thinking in ways that are not correct. What I'm leading to is this. Suicide, of course, is never the answer to whatever is going on in your life. Suicide is never God's answer. When someone commits suicide, sometimes we hear the expression, they took their life in their hands. It's an accurate expression. Because in suicide, you've taken your life out of God's hands. Not left yourself in God's hands, but instead taken your life into your own hands. And to do that is always a poor choice. Suicide leaves such devastation behind. And it never accomplishes good things. It's flat out devastating. It just is. Yes, we go through rough times, but I encourage you, if you or anybody you know of ever expresses to you that they're feeling that bad, or you ever get to feeling that bad that you begin to entertain those kinds of thoughts, please come talk to me or Sean or Mark or somebody. Find somebody close to you and share that. Get prayer, get encouragement. Sometimes we can physically feel so bad or just be so strung out, so tired, whatever it is, that we begin to think those kind of thoughts and actually think they're a solution. We go through the loss of a loved one. We go through pain, a loss of a relationship, and we think, oh, I'm just going to end it all. And our thinking, it becomes crazy. But just let the alarms go off in your head and your heart. If you ever begin to entertain a thought like that, please come talk, get counsel, seek out help. It is never, never the answer. Verse 24. Then David went to Mahanaim, and Absalom crossed over the Jordan, he and all the men of Israel with him. So at this point now, David has gone over Jordan, and he's headed off to a town, an area called Mahanaim. Absalom has his troops, and they've crossed over the Jordan in pursuit of David. And Absalom made Amasa captain of the army instead of Joab. This Amasa was the son of a man whose name was Jithra, an Israelite, who had gone into Abigail, the daughter of Nahash, sister of Zariah, Joab's mother. So Israel and Absalom encamped in the land of Gilead. So the battle's about to be happening here. They're about to be engaged in battle. David has fled to a particular area, and now he's being pursued by his son and all these troops. And Amasa is made captain instead of... Absalom makes this Amasa captain of the army instead of Joab. Verse 27, now it happened when David had come to Mahanaim that Shobai, the son of Nahash, from Rabbah of the people of Ammon, Machir, the son of Amiel from Lodibar, and Barzillai, the Gileadite from Rogalim, brought beds and basins, earthen vessels and wheat, barley and flour, parched grain and beans, lentils and parched seeds, honey and curds, sheep and cheese of the herd for David and the people who were with him to eat. For they said, the people are hungry and weary and thirsty in the wilderness. Just as a real brief sidelight, these of course are just named here as men, people who are touched by David's situation and bring out help to him. It is interesting, tonight, later on, Lord willing, time willing, we'll be talking about Mephibosheth. You remember Mephibosheth was a descendant of Saul, he's a son of Jonathan. David attempts to or desires to bless Mephibosheth and learns about his existence and sends for him. Well, at that time, it tells us that he was living out here with this Machir in Lodibar. Apparently, these are some good-hearted people that take people in, and they probably have heard how David had treated Mephibosheth. But their heart goes out to David here, whatever the cause, and they choose to help him out. Chapter 18. The battle. The big battle. And David numbered the people who were with him and set captains of thousands and captains of hundreds over them. So obviously David has now gathered together some troops of his own, those who are loyal to or want to align themselves with David. Then David sent out one-third of the people under the hand of Joab, so that's his commander, one-third under the hand of Abishai, the son of Zeruiah, Joab's brother, and one-third under the hand of Ittai the Gittite. And the king said to the people, I also will surely go out with you myself. But the people answered, you shall not go out. For if we flee away, they will not care about us. Nor if half of us die, will they care about us. But you are worth 10,000 of us now. For you are now more help to us in the city. Then the king said to them, whatever seems best to you, I will do. So the king stood beside the gate, and all the people went out by hundreds and by thousands. Now the king had commanded Joab, Abishai, and Ittai, saying, deal gently for my sake with the young man Absalom. And all the people heard when the king gave all the captains orders concerning Absalom. So now, David organizes his forces into three parts, and he sends them out. He says at first, I'm going to go with you. I'm going to go fight with you. And they go, no, you don't. They won't care if we run away, but if you're with, you're worth a bunch to them. It's better if you just stay in the city. And so he does so. But notice, he tells them, he tells the captain specifically, deal gently with my son, Absalom. Verse 6. So the people went out into the field of battle against Israel, and the battle was in the woods of Ephraim. The people of Israel were overthrown there before the servants of David, and a great slaughter of 20,000 took place there that day. For the battle there was scattered over the face of the whole countryside, and the woods devoured more people that day than the sword devoured. So David's troops get the victory over Absalom's forces. Apparently, the woods were such in nature, it was so thick, thickly wooded and all, that there was a great confusion, and it says Absalom's forces fare badly because of this. And verse 9, the death of Absalom. Then Absalom met the servants of David, and Absalom rode on a mule. The mule went under the thick boughs of a great terebinth tree, and his head caught in the terebinth, so he was left hanging between heaven and earth, and the mule which was under him went on. I think we probably get the picture. Remember, Absalom apparently had thick hair. I talked about earlier chapters here how he would once a year would actually shave his hair and it would be a big amount and everything. He talked about the weight. Well, apparently here he's riding under the tree, and he gets caught in this tree, suspended by his hair or his head or something, gets jammed in this tree in such a way that he's hanging there. His mule keeps going, and he doesn't. And so now he's there going, you know, swinging back and forth, going, help, you know, he's caught in this tree. Verse 10, now a certain man saw it and tells Joab. So a guy sees it, and he runs over and tells Joab. And said, I just saw Absalom hanging in a terebinth tree. So Joab said to the man who told him, you just saw him? And why did you not strike him there to the ground? I would have given you 10 shekels of silver and a belt. But the man said to Joab, though I were to receive 1,000 shekels of silver in my hand, I would not raise my hand against the king's son. For in our hearing the king commanded you, and Abishai, and Ittai, saying, beware lest anyone touch the young man Absalom. Otherwise I would have dealt falsely against my own life. For there is nothing hidden from the king, and you yourself would have set yourself against me. This guy comes and he goes, hey, Absalom's hanging in a tree over here. And Joab goes, you just let him be? Why don't you kill him? I would have given you this reward. And he goes, yeah, right. If I killed him, what would have happened was the king would have found out, and you'd be the one out to get me. You'd be killing me right now. I heard what the king said, not to hurt his son. Well, Joab is Joab. And here's what he says, verse 14. Then Joab said, I cannot linger with you. And he took 3 spears in his hand and thrust them through Absalom's heart while he was still alive in the midst of the terebinth tree. And 10 young men who bore Joab's armor surrounded Absalom and struck and killed him. Joab takes these 3 spears and runs Absalom through while he hangs defenseless in the tree. Then some of his guys come and finish Absalom off. A sad ending. So Joab blew the trumpet, and the people returned from pursuing Israel. For Joab held back the people, and they took Absalom and cast him into a large pit in the woods, and laid a very large heap of stones over him. Then all Israel fled, everyone to his tent. Now Absalom, in his lifetime, had taken and set up a pillar for himself, which is in the king's valley. For he said, I have no son to keep my name in remembrance. He called the pillar after his own name, and to this day it is called Absalom's Monument. So Absalom is taken down from the tree, cast in a ditch, in a hole here, in the woods, and they pile a big pile of stones upon him. Thus ends Absalom. It's a sad ending for a sad life. You never really see Absalom surrendered. As far as I recall, you don't even see Absalom ever pray. He's just a young man who's out for himself. And it mentions he has no son. He had no one. He had no kids. He had no son to pass on his name or anything. Matter of fact, in preparation for that, he had decided to build for himself a monument in King's Valley. Now, you can visit Jerusalem today, and if you drive down the Kidron Valley, the King's Valley, between the city, the old city of Jerusalem, and the Mount of Olives is the Kidron Valley, and sure enough, in the bottom of there are some monuments, and they kind of get your attention, and one of them is called Absalom's Tomb. However, there's certainly no way of verifying. Well, Absalom we saw is out in a pit somewhere, but we don't know if that's even the monument that he built for himself. It's called his tomb or monument today. Kind of need to look at, but there's, should I say, some are skeptical, so that's really the original one that's there today. Verse 19. Some bad news is going to get back to David. Then Ahimaaz, the son of Zadok, said, let me run now and take the news to the king how the Lord has avenged him of his enemies. And Joab said to him, you shall not take the news this day, for you shall take the news another day, but today you shall take no news because the king's son is dead. Then Joab said to the Cushite, go and tell the king what you have seen. So the Cushite bowed himself to Joab and ran. And Ahimaaz, the son of Zadok, said again to Joab, please, whatever happens, please let me also run after the Cushite. So Joab said, why will you run, my son, since you have no news ready? But whatever happens, he said, let me run. She said to him, run. Then Ahimaaz ran by way of the plain and outran the Cushite. Ahimaaz apparently likes to run, and he wants to be he wants to tell the king something. He's a messenger. He wants to go tell the king. And so first he says, I want to go tell the king about how the battle's gone here. And Joab says, no, you're not going to do that. Instead, I'm going to send the Cushite. So he sends off this Cushite to go tell the king. Well, you know, Ahimaaz is still like, no, I want to go. I don't know. You ever had kids bug you? Keep bugging me. I want to do it. Finally, he goes, oh, just go. Run and tell him. So he takes off running, and he actually outruns the Cushite. Ahimaaz is going to get there first. Verse 24, now David was sitting between the two gates. That makes reference to, in that culture, a lot of those cities in those days built for defenses had like an inner gate and an outer gate. You go today and you can see the ruins as well as some of the current, like in the old city of Jerusalem. Many of the gates, you don't just go straight in. They oftentimes would have a curve so they couldn't get their battering rams and everything. So there's like an inner gate and an outer gate. David's sitting right there between the gates. And the watchman went up to the roof over the gate to the wall, lifted his eyes and looked, and there was a man running alone. Then the watchman cried out and told the king, and the king said, if he is alone, there is news in his mouth. And he came rapidly and drew near. Then the watchman saw another man running, and the watchman called to the gatekeeper and said, there is another man running alone. And the king said, he also brings news. So the watchman said, I think the running of the first is like the running of Ahimaaz, the son of Zadok. And the king said, he is a good man and comes with good news. Probably Joab knew that it would be interpreted as that, and he doesn't have good news, at least not in terms of, well, his son. But he has good news about the battle. That is true. So Ahimaaz called out and said to the king, all is well. Then he bowed down with his face to the earth before the king and said, blessed be the Lord your God, who has delivered up the men who raised their hand against my lord the king. So basically, hey, we got victory over these guys who are leading rebellion. But there's one thing on the king's heart. Is the young man Absalom safe? Ahimaaz answered, when Joab sent the king's servant and me your servant, I saw a great tumult, but I did not know what it was about. So he sets forward that he doesn't know. He left after the Cushite, who's going to know, but he says he doesn't. Maybe Ahimaaz decides not to break the news. Maybe he somehow just doesn't want to be the bearer. He doesn't want to be the one to tell the king that news or whatever. He wants to tell him the good news, but not the bad. But then the Cushite shows up here. And the king said, turn aside and stand here. So he turned aside and stood still. Just then the Cushite came, and the Cushite said, there is good news, my lord the king, for the Lord has avenged you this day of all those who rose against you. And the king said to the Cushite, is the young man Absalom safe? So the Cushite answered, may the enemies of my lord the king and all who rise against you to do harm be like that young man. That's a fancy way of saying he's dead. May everybody who rises up against you be like what has happened to him. Then the king, verse 33, was deeply moved and went up to the chamber over the gate and wept. And as he went, he said thus, O my son Absalom, my son Absalom, if only I had died in your place. O Absalom, my son, my son. The idea is David doesn't respond to the victory of battle. He's focused on his son. And the minute he hears that his son is dead, he begins to deeply grieve Absalom's death. And probably, we don't know for sure, but tinged with just what we might call normal grief here, is David knows that it's his sin that has brought much of this on. Remember, as I said at the beginning, the Lord had told David, because of what you've done, the sword will not depart from your house. So we don't know what personal guilt David is wrestling with at this point. We don't know how much that was adding to it. We all do know that guilt can be a heavy burden. Oh, if I'd only, if I could just redo it. When David took a walk on the roof that night and saw Bathsheba bathing and sent for her and slept with her As his mind got carried away and thought about how nice that would be, I doubt if the fantasy went out beyond the immediate. I doubt if he said, gee, I think I'll do this and bring havoc into my household. I think I'll do this and bring devastation to everybody around me. I think I'll do this and mess up my family and the nation and everything else. No, probably not. Fantasies aren't like that. They just go out to the part where the flesh gets interested and excited and is drawn to those things. Rarely do people carry it out to its conclusion. Rarely people say, gee, I think I'll get involved with these drugs or this person or whatever it might be so that I'll mess up my life and destroy my marriage and wreck my family and be a bad witness and stumble others and lose my job. Most people don't fantasize that kind of thing. But do not be deceived. God is not mocked. Whatever you sow, you will reap. He says so. And when we sin, it's not in a vacuum. But as I've said it before, I say it again. The ripples go out in our lives like throwing a rock in the middle of the lake. The ripples just go outward and you cannot stop them. Yes, God does often intervene in many things we would normally have to suffer. And he does step in the way. And thank God he does. If God didn't intervene, this room would be empty. So he does soften and he does step in, but the reality is we do have natural consequences. We do have consequences sometimes, well, that he allows or brings, that he allows to come into our life. My point is, David here is suffering from that, and we need to see the same thing. The enemy only dangles the worm in front of us, but he keeps the hook well hidden. But you got to believe, inside that juicy worm of what you think will be this relationship will bring you such great things, this drug, this activity, this gambling, this thing that gets your heart to going and brings excitement and all those things, cures the boredom and all these things you think. Inside that juicy worm, at least it looks like it, is a hook. And there was a hook for David. So he's sitting there above the gate and he's got to know that part of all this is from himself. Heavy, heavy weight. But even beside that, it's just the fact that his son Absalom, is now dead. Had led a rebellion against him, wanted him dead, and now Absalom is dead. And Absalom had been a rebellious son. But even though he's a rebellious son, David had loved him. He had the love of a father for Absalom. Absalom had wanted his father dead. Now David says, I wish I could change places with him. I wish I could be dead instead of him. Interesting. David had Saul before him who wanted David dead. But he didn't let Saul turn him into a Saul. He didn't let Saul turn David into a Saul. Instead, he chose to keep a heart after God's heart. Now, at the end of his life, he has a son that wanted him dead. But he chose not to let that make him like a Saul or an Absalom. He wants his son alive. David was not like his enemies. He didn't let his enemies make him like them. Don't let that happen to you. Don't let those around you who are negative, talk poorly of you, do evil things, whatever it might be, don't let them turn you into someone like them. Oh, I'm going to get revenge. I'm going to get even. David instead just says, I wish that I could take my son's place. There is a parallel of sorts here. I don't want to stretch it too far, but there is an interesting parallel. Absalom was a rebellious son. David wished he could take his son's place. We are rebellious sons and daughters. Jesus did take our place. He did die for us bunch of rebellious sinners. And that's the heart of our Heavenly Father for us. And he didn't just wish he could take our place, but the Father sent his only begotten Son to actually do that, to take our place, to suffer the death that we deserved. He bore our sins to give us life. That's love. Chapter 19. And Joab was told, "Behold, the king is weeping and mourning for Absalom." So the victory that day was turned into mourning for all the people. For the people heard it said that day, "The king is grieved for his son." And the people stole back into the city that day as people who are ashamed steal away when they flee in battle. I think we understand the idea here. David's mourning has turned the victory into a sad time for all the people. Because he's not rejoicing, instead he's mourning, they come back ashamed as if they're the ones who lost instead of the ones who won. Verse 4. But the king covered his face, and the king cried out with a loud voice, "Oh, my son Absalom, oh, Absalom, my son, my son." He's wailing, he's crying. They can hear him up in the tower there. He's going on and on, crying and mourning. And instead of rejoicing, and they're bummed, and they're ashamed, they come back into town, and they kind of got to sneak back home. There's no victory parade for them. Verse 5, then Joab came into the house to the king and said, "Today you have disgraced all your servants who today have saved your life, the lives of your sons and daughters, the lives of your wives and the lives of your concubines, in that you love your enemies and hate your friends. For you have declared today that you regard neither princes nor servants. For today I perceive that if Absalom had lived and all of us had died today, then it would have pleased you well. Now, therefore, arise and go out and speak comfort to your servants. For I swear by the Lord, if you do not go out, not one will stay with you this night. And that will be worse for you than all the evil that has befallen you from your youth until now." He does not pull punches. Joab comes in and basically goes, "What are you doing?" In modern vernacular, he'd say, "You are blowing it big time. What are you doing? You're shaming the very people who stuck up for you. David, you are wrong to act like this. You act like, you know," he says, "you know, I perceive if your son, the one who wanted to kill you and led a rebellion against you, if he'd lived and we all died, you'd be all happy right now." And he's saying, "Man, you got it reversed." And he says this, "You better stop that, get out there and speak comfort to those who did this for you. Or by the time this night is over, you will not have anybody with you. And it was going to go worse for you than it has from youth until now." That's saying a lot. Because he's gone through some rough times. Basically saying, "You know what, if you don't rise to the occasion now, if you don't shake this off and get out there and give your thanks and give words of strength and comfort to those who fought for you, if you don't do that, you are going to pay a high price. The consequence will be more than you can even, well, it's going to be a bunch. And so get out there." Verse 8, then the king arose and sat in the gate, and they told all the people, saying, "There is the king sitting in the gate." So all the people came before the king, for every one of Israel had fled to his tent. David gets this, he understands it, and he gets up and gets out in the gate there and begins to greet them. And so they had kind of snuck back home, and so now they all gather from their homes and come before him, kind of have this victory parade after all. They pass before him, and he speaks words of comfort and all to them. He comes to his senses, so to speak. Verse 9. Now all the people were in dispute throughout all the tribes of Israel, saying, "The king saved us from the hand of our enemies. He delivered us from the hand of the Philistines, and now he has fled from the land because of Absalom. But Absalom, whom we anointed over us, has died in battle. Now therefore, why do you say nothing about bringing back the king?" So they point out, we had David as king, but then he fled. He got victory over all the Philistines, but now with his own son coming against him, he fled, and he's still out of Jerusalem. The gate the city was in was over there at Mahanaim. And they say, "Look, Absalom's dead. How come nobody's bringing the king back? We got to bring the king back here to Jerusalem." Interesting statement. "Why do you say nothing about bringing back the king?" Hey, we anointed Absalom, but they see now that was, they blew it. He's dead. Time to get the king back in his place. Hopefully that speaks to all of our hearts. Perhaps it's a challenge. Perhaps it even convicts you. You understand you've made some wrong choices. You've let other things rule and reign in your life. Maybe the same thing could be spoken to you. Why are you saying nothing about bringing back the king? Time to bring the king back. Let him have the driver's seat again in your life. Verse 11, so King David sent to Zadok and Abiathar the priest, saying, speak to the elders of Judah. Remember, David is of the tribe of Judah, saying, why are you the last to bring the king back to his house, since the words of all Israel have come to the king to his very house? In other words, hey, everybody else is talking about bringing me back. How come you guys aren't doing this? You're my tribe. You should be leading the way. Verse 12, you are my brethren. You are my bone and my flesh. Why then are you the last to bring back the king? And say to Amasa, are you not my bone and my flesh? God do so to me, and more also, if you are not commander of the army before me continually in place of Joab. Interesting. He asks his tribe, why are you not bringing me back? And then he makes this overture to Amasa. Remember, Amasa had been placed as commander over Absalom's troops. Joab was one of the leaders of David's troops. But as David sends to his tribe and says, how come you're not bringing me back? He tells Amasa, basically, you bring me back and I'll put you in charge over, you know, I'll put you in Joab's place. You'll be the commander. Verse 14, so he swayed the hearts of all the men of Judah just as the heart of one man. So they sent this word to the king, return, you and all your servants. Then the king returned and came to the Jordan. So now he's coming back from Mahanaim. He's come to the Jordan. He's going to make his way to Jerusalem eventually. So he comes to the Jordan. And Judah came to Gilgal. Remember Gilgal? Gilgal was the first city when they originally came into the land. It was one of the first places they came and settled in. And so now he's coming back to that again. And so Judah comes out to Gilgal. It's right there by Jordan. And they're going to meet King David. He's returning now. And he's coming to cross over the Jordan and coming in Jerusalem. Judah came to Gilgal to go to meet the king, to escort the king across the Jordan. And Shimei, the son of Gera, a Benjamite, who was from Baharim, hurried and came down with the men of Judah to meet King David. How many here remember Shimei? How many remember Shimei? You remember Shimei? Yeah. Let me refresh your memories or explain who Shimei is. When David was on his way out of Jerusalem, Shimei was the guy, remember, he came out, he's in the house of Saul. And he chose to use this time when David was really down. Remember, he's the guy that started walking beside this David and his men walking down and began to throw rocks at David and throw dirt at him and to curse him. You know, ah, oh, you're getting what you deserve. You know, you did all that to Saul and now it's coming upon you. And he was chucking rocks at him and at David and just saying all. And he said he traveled along beside them throwing dust and dirt and saying bad things to David. And David said, let him be, let him keep doing it. David has won. He's on his way back into town. Shimei's in a jam. He had just, last time he saw David, he was throwing rocks at him and calling him not so nice names and all. So here's what Shimei decides to do. Verse 17. He goes out to meet David, and there were 1,000 men of Benjamin with him. So he's apparently fairly influential. He gets 1,000 of his tribe men to go out with him. And Ziba, good old Ziba. And Ziba, the servant of the house of Saul, and his 15 sons and his 20 servants with him, and they went over the Jordan before the king. Then a ferry boat went across to carry over the king's household and do what he thought good. Now Shimei, the son of Gera, fell down before the king when he had crossed the Jordan. Then he said to the king, do not let my lord impute iniquity to me, or remember what wrong your servant did on the day that my lord, the king, left Jerusalem, that the king should take it to heart. For I, your servant, know that I have sinned. Therefore, here I am, the first to come today of all the house of Joseph to go down to meet my lord, the king. So he comes out and he falls before the king and he goes, basically says, David, you know all that stuff I did? Don't hold it against me. Don't take it to heart. He's saying, don't hold this against me. I know I threw rocks at you. I said these things, but really, don't take it to heart. I know I've sinned. I was wrong for doing that. And look, I'm the first one of my tribe to come out here. See what a good guy I am? I've come out here. Well, it says, but Abishai, the son of Zariah, answered. Remember, Abishai was one of the three leaders. Remember, he's one of the three division leaders, commanders of the army. Abishai, the son of Zariah, answered and said, shall not Shimei be put to death for this because he cursed the Lord's anointed? So Abishai wants to kill him. Verse 22, and David said,
What have I to do with you, you sons of Zariah, that you should be adversaries to me today? Shall any man be put to death today in Israel? For do I not know that today I am king over Israel? Therefore the king said to Shimei, you shall not die. And the king swore to him. David says, no, don't kill him. It's a day of celebration. I'm coming back into Jerusalem. Things will be set right. It's a day of rejoicing, not a day of killing. I know I'm king. Don't I already know I'm king? I don't need to go around just arbitrarily wielding power or something. David's an interesting guy. A lot of people say, oh, I should definitely show power now and kill this guy for doing that. But no, it's a day of rejoicing, not a day of killing. Don't do that. And he turns to Shimei and says, you won't die. Now, I should mention this briefly. David doesn't completely let Shimei off the hook. It's true, on this particular day, he chooses not to kill Shimei. But there's going to come a time later on, as David is dying, that David is going to speak to his son Solomon with some instructions. And one of those instructions in passing will be, oh, by the way, go take care of Shimei. Go get even with him. So David doesn't completely forget this. Just on this day, he decides not to do him any harm. Verse 24. Now Mephibosheth, the son of Saul, came down to meet the king. We covered these verses this morning, but I realize some were not here. Let me refresh you again just briefly. Mephibosheth is a son of Jonathan. David had taken Mephibosheth in for the sake of Jonathan. He wanted to take care of, he wanted to treat anybody good who was a descendant of Saul and Jonathan. So Mephibosheth was that one. And so Mephibosheth had been taken in by David and ate at David's table continually. And David had placed a guy named Ziba over Mephibosheth's stuff to take care of it for him. However, when David left Jerusalem, Ziba showed up and told David that Mephibosheth wasn't coming with David because Mephibosheth thinks he's going to get to be on the throne now. As we'll see in a moment, that'll turn out to be a lie. Ziba did not tell the truth that day. But on that day, when David heard that explanation, he believes it. He shouldn't have. He heard one side and decided to believe it, and gave everything that belonged to Mephibosheth to Ziba. Now, having said that, now David's on his way back into town, and here comes Mephibosheth. Now Mephibosheth, the son of Saul, came down to meet the king. And he had not cared for his feet. Remember, he was lame in his feet. He had something wrong with him. Nor trimmed his mustache, nor washed his clothes from the day the king departed until the day he returned in peace. The idea here is Mephibosheth, that's all he cared about was David coming back. He did not take care of himself. And basically he was mourning. He was grieving. He was just concerned about David. That's the only thing he was doing, was focused on David and seeing David come back. Verse 25. So it was when he had come to Jerusalem to meet the king that the king said to him, why did you not go with me, Mephibosheth? And he answered, my lord, O king, my servant deceived me. For your servant said, I will saddle a donkey for myself, that I may ride on it and go to the king, because your servant is lame. And he has slandered your servant to my lord the king. But my lord the king is like the angel of God. Therefore do what is good in your eyes. For all my father's house were but dead men before my lord the king. Yet you set your servant among those who eat at your own table. Therefore what right have I still to cry out any more to the king? So the king said to him, why do you speak any more of your matters? I have said, you and Ziba divide the land. Then Mephibosheth said to the king, rather, let him take it all, inasmuch as my lord the king has come back in peace to his own house. Mephibosheth points out that Ziba had lied to David. And we see that David had judged faulty judgment in this case, had believed one side and went with it. As I expressed this morning, that is a sad thing when it occurs. I strongly encourage you, don't ever do that. Don't fall victim to that. Don't hear one side and go with it. If it doesn't apply to you, just let it go. If it's something you should be concerned about, then go check it out. Go talk to the other person. Get the other side. But be careful when you hear something. But of particular interest here, and what I've got highlighted in my Bible is a couple places here, is just Mephibosheth's attitude. It's a good, humble attitude. Who am I to complain? He says, you know, I was nothing. You're the one that brought me into your house to eat at your table continually. My whole family was as dead men. You've reached out to me. Who am I to complain? And to that, David says, well, then split the stuff between you. And Mephibosheth gives that awesome answer. Hey, it's not about the stuff. Let Ziba have it all. It was never about stuff. It's about you, David. I just want to see you ruling and reigning in your rightful place. That's what I want to see. You've blessed me. You've been good to me. I just want to see you in your rightful place. Let him have it. Let Ziba have it all. Yes, he lied. Let him have it all. I'm just happy to see you back where you belong. And that is the right heart. Again, it emphasizes the importance of us of not believing one side of a story, but checking it out. And it speaks to us of our attitude should always be, Lord, whatever people say, whatever goes on around me, whatever might come against me, it's not about me. May we be able to say like Mephibosheth, Lord, just have your rightful place. I just want to see you have your rightful place in my life. Well, we need to press on because of time. And Barzillai, the Gileadite, came down from Rogalim and went across the Jordan with the king to escort him across the Jordan. Now Barzillai was a very aged man, 80 years old, and he had provided the king with supplies while he stayed at Mahanaim, for he was a very rich man. So that explains who Barzillai is. He's an elderly man who had taken care of David and his people when he was staying there at Mahanaim. And the king said to Barzillai, come across with me, and I will provide for you while you are with me in Jerusalem. In other words, you're elderly. Come on, come with me, and I'll take care of you. But Barzillai said to the king, how long have I to live that I should go up with the king to Jerusalem? I am today 80 years old. Can I discern between the good and bad? Can your servant taste what I eat or what I drink? Can I hear any longer the voice of singing men and singing women? Why then should your servant be a further burden to my lord the king? The idea here is, hey, I'm old. My senses are fading. I can't hear anymore. I can't taste good. I'm just getting old. How long much longer is it till I'll die? Why should I go up and be a burden to you? Verse 36. Your servant will go a little way across the Jordan with the king. And why should the king repay me with such a reward? Please let your servant turn back again, that I may die in my own city, near the grave of my father and mother. But here's your servant Chimham. Let him cross over with my lord the king and do for him what seems good to you. And the king answered, Chimham shall cross over with me, and I will do for him what seems good to you. Now whatever you request to me, I will do for you. Then all the people went over the Jordan, and when the king had crossed over, the king kissed Barzillai and blessed him, and he returned to his own place. Pretty self-explanatory section, just mentioning of Barzillai and all. And he sends Chimham, who apparently is a servant or whatever, Barzillai's household. He says, here, you go with David, and David will take care of you. Verse 40. Now the king went on to Gilgal. So okay, he's crossed the Jordan. Now he's in Israel. He's making his way. And Chimham went on with him. And all the people of Judah escorted the king and also half the people of Israel. Just then all the men of Israel came to the king and said to the king, why have our brethren, the men of Judah, stolen you away and brought the king, his household, and all David's men with him across the Jordan? So all the men of Judah answered the men of Israel, because the king is a close relative of ours. Why then are you angry over this matter? Have we ever eaten at the king's expense? Or has he given us any gift? In other words, Israel comes out and goes, hey, how come, you know, kind of like kids fighting, you know, how come he gets this? Well, I'm supposed to get it. Well, you know, the men of Israel come out and go, how come Judah gets to bring you back? We should have brought you back. And the men of Judah go, hey, he's of our family. Why shouldn't we be the one to bring him back? And they point out, have we ever been, you know, he doesn't show us any favoritism. Have we ever gotten a gift from him we shouldn't have or something? But we're of his family. Why shouldn't we bring him back? So this little debate going on between them. Verse 43, and the men of Israel answered the men of Judah and said, we have 10 shares in the king. Therefore, we also have more right to David than you. Why then do you despise us? Were we not the first to advise bringing back our king? Yet the words of the men of Judah were fiercer than the words of the men of Israel. So there's this kind of tug of war over David. Men of Israel say, we should be the one bringing him back. And the men of Judah go, we should be the ones bringing him back. They're going, well, we're the ones that thought of it first. Well, we're family. We're kin. So they're going back and forth about this. You know, as we kind of wrap up our time tonight, David was not a stranger to the conflicts of man, was he? Think about the times that David lived. You know, I was talking to one of the guys here this morning, and he's been making it a point to read through 1 and 2 Samuel. And we learn so much from David's life, and it's awesome examples. And I trust you've been coming to these times, and both Sunday mornings and Sunday nights, we've looked at the life of David. There's so rich stuff here. It's so awesome. But there's no one who'd be able to say that David lived in a totally smooth, easy time. All of his life, the beginning, middle, end, and everything, he had his share of trials and dealing with people and their bickerings and fightings and sins. And, you know, I mean, it was a rough time. Killing of people and just, well, he's no stranger to conflict. Why do I say all that? To encourage you. Well, how's that supposed to encourage me? Because in the midst of all this, God looks at David and says, he's a man after my own heart. Sometimes we think, wow, how can I expect to follow God? How can I be really strong with God? Look at my situations. Look at my circumstances. Look what I got to put up with. Look at the job you gave me, the family you gave me, the friends you gave me, we name it. Look at my income. Look where I live. And we come up with all these reasons that might, we think, disqualify us. Look at the times we live in. Look how crazy they are. Look at the world. It's getting so weird, Lord. And we see all these things, but you know what? Be encouraged. It's much like when David was around. In fighting, going around him, fighting outside of him, enemies around the territory, a world that's just upside down, all kinds of things. And yet, he was able to keep a heart after God's heart in the midst of it all. And so can we. Not their own self-efforts, by just staying in that place of abiding in the Lord. Spending that time, just being all about Him. Just saying, Lord, whatever the world goes, whatever they're up to, Lord, my prayer is, have your rightful place right here. Like Mephibosheth said, Lord, I just want you to be in your rightful place. And we say the same thing to Jesus. Just be in your rightful place. And that will give us that heart. There'll be a heart after His in the midst of it all. We need to wrap it up. Let's stand. Covered a lot tonight. You're good Bible students. Tomorrow, if at all possible, come down and join us. Should be a fun time of fellowship, an awesome time of celebration down at our picnic and baptism down in Mission Bay. If you can't, come join us where you can or can. Either way, make sure you try to carve out some time and come out Wednesday night for communion afterglow. Important stuff. And let's all just keep traveling together. Kaylin's going to come up and close us in a song together. If you need prayer for any reason, there'll be prayer partners available as we wrap it up, either as we're singing or afterwards. Come give prayer. Let's pray right now. Father, thank you. We have covered much tonight, Lord, and well, we know that none of us are here by accident, so Lord, we know there's something that we looked at tonight for each of us. Help us, Lord. Help us now to leave here tonight and to ponder and think about these things. And help us in these days ahead to let you just apply them. Your word never returns void. And so we know that there is strengthening and encouragement, a comfort, a challenge for each one of us. Help us to hear. Help us to do what you've shown us. Thank you, Lord. In Jesus' name. Amen.